Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. What an episode we've got today. Holy shit. I don't want to waste much time at all. So, as you know, we've been talking about this episode for a while. We were so pumped to get to go to our guest's house in New York and get this episode. You know him, you love him. He's done it all. Neil Patrick Harris is our guest today on the About Last Night podcast. Which is featured on iTunes. Go to iTunes. We're on the front page of iTunes with this episode. Shout out to our boy Steve there and iTunes for making this happen. This was an incredible thing and episode and conversation from Neil's early days as Doogie Howser to his musical theater background to being a dad to his Muppet love to his magician background. This episode is just one of those special ones that you're like, oh, I'm probably going to go back and listen to that again because there's a lot of really good shit. We also talked about Neil's new Netflix show, A Series of Unfortunate Events, in which he plays Count Olaf, which premieres January 13th on Netflix. The trailer's online. It looks fucking incredible. So make sure you check that out. And follow Neil on Twitter, at @actuallynph. That's at @actuallynph. Tweet at Neil. Tell him how much you love the episode. And enjoy the hell out of this one. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy, at Funny Brad, at Ailen Podcast, at Ailen Podcast on Instagram, Adam Ray 33 on Instagram, Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. Brad is going to be this weekend at the Celebrity Theater in Phoenix, Arizona with Ralphie May, December 16th at 8 p.m. Get your tickets at celebritytheater.com. And then December 23rd, Brad will be at the Irvine Improv for two shows, 7:30 and 9:45. Get your tickets at improv.com. I will be in Seattle, hometown show, Columbia City Theater, December 23rd, 7 p.m. Get your tickets at adamraytv.com. Columbia City Theater, downtown Seattle, December 23rd. That's the Friday before Christmas. So come out and party with me, 7 p.m. I'm bringing Avery Pearson to do some music. Got some other surprises planned. It's going to be awesome. December 23rd, 7 p.m., Columbia City Theater. And then Las Vegas, Nevada, I'll be headlining the Laugh Factory at the Tropicana December 26th through January 1st. Get your tickets at laughfactory.com. EstoyMerchandise.com for all your Ailen merch, hat shirts, mugs, posters. Get them all there. They make great holiday gifts. You know, Hanukkah and Christmas starting this year. Around the same time, I believe. Fuck, I'm such a bad Jew. I think it starts the day of Christmas. I think. God damn it. Anyway. Go to EstoyMerchandise.com and get your ALN merch and make somebody's holiday a little more special with an ALN mug. Come on. Drink some eggnog out of Brad's face. and all that merch, again, is at EstoyMerchandise.com. So many great eps coming up. This Neil Patrick Harris one is just so fucking great. And we've got some best of ALNs coming at you again like we did last year. A year in review, a two-part year in review. With highlights of some of our best guests from the past year, which, man, looking back at that guest list, so many. It's going to be really awesome to put that together. So be on the lookout for that. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes. Tell a friend. Tell somebody today. Tell a friend, a coworker, a stranger, a homeless person. Say, hey, check out the About Last Night podcast. It's a lot of fun. All right? Now that we got the tour dates out of the way, those are the Twitter handles. That's the merch info. And now, sit back, relax, and enjoy a very special brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only Neil Patrick Harris.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's About Last Night.
You said you have twin six-year-olds.
Check two. Check.
Can you hear
check that? Yeah. Should I have headphones? Or something?
No, I have them just check. To make sure we can hear everything.
Yeah, but, good.
I have 7-year-old twin nieces. Nice. So you know, I'm not going to be the uncle who's like, I know what it's like to have kids. I babysat them twice. But the twin world, just from being around it, is
it's super awesome.
It's bonkers and awesome. Yeah,
we have buddies? A boy and a girl. Yeah, they're buddies, but they annoy each other. They're kind of whiny, telly. Seeker. Are we going? Are we talking?
Yeah,
about
let's get
kids?
Going. Let's go. Well, congrats on
kind
the...
of. They're kind of all. They're in whining, telling on each other mode right now.
Did they trick or treat,
Papa? Yeah, they trick or treated.
Oh yeah, because that's
fun.
That's like your holiday. you go all out for Halloween.
I love Halloween, but I'm realizing as a new parent,
yeah,
newish parent,
mm-hmm.
that it's not my holiday anymore. It's more their Aww. Holiday now.
Rest, should I pour out some of this coffee for Neil's love for Halloween?
A little bit. Because well, I was always very excited about trick-or-treaters
yeah.
And having scares and fog machines.
Yeah, yeah, you set up haunted houses or you
for
would...
For sure.
Yeah, I remember hearing commercials for the Neil Patrick Harris haunted house over in Los Angeles.
Yeah, my house in the valley was a cul-de-sac street. And so we would let people enter from one side and go down the gate, go through a gate down a hallway, and then outside we would put up mazes. And we had one was a circus theme one year. One year was called The Butcher Boy. We made a horrible song.
Do you still remember how it goes?
Yeah, it wasn't very exciting. It was like, Butcher Boy, Butcher Boy. Beware the butcher boy.
Yeah, that's
butcher
terrifying.
Butcher boy, sure. Butcher boy, he's coming to get you.
Sleep tight, kids. Wouldn't it be great if that was a 45-minute song and just cut to us
played,
wrapping up
it
the...
It played it in a big loop around and around.
Well, are you big on scaring people in general? Like, when I first graduated college, I worked at Universal Studios Hollywood as a tour guide.
Nice, oh, fun. And that's
then
a fun gig.
It was great. And then as Wolverine, because that just paid better.
Nice.
And then I did the Halloween Horror Nights one year, and it was like, they gave us free reign to scare the shit out of people, and it was really fun. And I was like, everybody should get to experience... getting to scare somebody like this.
Did your voice go out? I always worry about people's voices.
Well, I played like the Scarface zombie. So I just walked around just doing shitty Al Pacino impressions. And
trying to do a Cuban
people.
Accent?
Yeah. I would just be like, and they were like,
boo.
Boo.
Boo-ah.
Boo-ah, boo-ah. I actually coined that phrase and made a t-shirt.
They have those guys with the knee pads, the metal knee pads,
yes,
and they come
they
running
sparks.
And slide.
That's
on
terrifying.
The
there should be some sort of rule against that.
But. I like scaring people in a safe way. Which the not the to supermarket.
Yeah,
I don't like to go into Safeways and scare people. But I like to in a safe
That's
environment.
Amazing. Yeah,
yes.
I like to scare. I'm not a big practical joke scarer. I'm not a guy that hides and then jumps out at people and laughs at the fact that they are panicking.
That's old school. That's too
but
easy.
I like haunted houses because you are willingly going there to be scared.
Yeah,
you know that they're not going to touch you.
Right.
For the most part, those immersive theater ones now can get a little hardcore.
Yeah.
But you know that you're going to be safe, but you're still going to be scared, and that I enjoy.
Yeah.
However, with 6-year-olds.
Yeah. Not so much.
Take it back to your original question. Not so much because they want to go trick-or-treating and they can't have so much candy and you need to manage their energy levels and they have to eat dinner and there's kind of chaos in New York. It's not that idyllic street corner, you know, go out, walk up the suburban street and walk up the driveway and ring the doorbell and say trick-or-treat to the people
sure.
and they say, oh, what are you wearing? It's 5,000 kids and 10,000 parents.
And a five-story walk-up.
Adderall everywhere. Just like people just...
Oh, yeah.
It's chaos.
Sure.
And so then I'm trying to...
And that's just the good houses who don't have king-size Snickers. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to make sure that the kids are having a proper time, that it's imprinting good memories not just a shit
chaos.
Show.
Well, and I've seen you guys tend to all dress as a family. I kind of went back and looked at your postcards, whether it was the Batman year, you were the Riddler, the kids were like Batman.
Yeah, that's incredible.
This year was Old Hollywood.
We went Old Hollywood, yeah.
Yeah, so you were Groucho?
I was Groucho, David was Charlie Chaplin, Harper was Marilyn Monroe, and Gideon was James Dean.
That's amazing.
And we showed them footage and images of the characters. We wanted her to be Monroe in the pink dress from Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend instead of the white dress that's showing her panties with the fan blowing underneath.
That's probably a good thing
as a
parent. Good move.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's you thinking ahead.
So, you know, you're welcome, everybody. She's not going to be a stripper yet.
Yeah. As long as
and we had him look at James Dean. So we tried to get him to get that furrowed brow expression of James Dean.
Now, do they like it? Do they get excited for Halloween? Do they share your love for the holiday?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. Harper's was not as excited about trick-or-treating as I thought she'd be.
Yeah.
She's very outgoing and loves to perform, but for some reason, and I don't know, I honestly don't know why. But
does she have like a greater understanding of like just going to strangers' houses and asking for candy is kind of weird?
That's maybe she's just really smart and savvy and, and appreciating that.
She's like, why don't we just go get some at Safeway?
Dad, if
you're not fucking banned from there.
it is strange that you give you tell your kids, all right, don't talk to strangers, don't talk to strangers. And one night you're like, now go to every house.
But dress up so
and
that
eat
sure
a
it's
caramel
not you.
Apple that a stranger has maybe made.
Right. So, you know, and as long as it has a vague wrapper on it, then you should be fine. So yeah, you're good. Like it's very it's very strange as a kid.
Maybe she's just really astute.
Now, what would you do if your children asked you if or told you they wanted to get into show business? Would you advise that they?
I would discourage it.
Mm-hmm.
Until they could get some sort of training of some sort.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Granted, I was a young child person.
Yes.
And I didn't have any training.
You didn't do any acting classes before you started?
No, I was from small town New Mexico. So it was all just kind of exciting. And that's why I got hired, I think, because I was innately and intuitively able to handle the pressures of dealing with adults and not be too freaked out. And I had parents, thankfully, that didn't talk to us like we were babies. And so I was able to exist in that situation, but only through sort of innate, intuitive existence, not skilled at all. And then at a certain point, that's where I think the kid actor has trouble transitioning sometimes, because then you're asked to not just go on your creative and intuitive laurels, but to actually have a skill set, because then you're suddenly 15 and they want you to work, actual work.
Yeah. And then you have ranges of emotions and you're not just showing up and you're, because now they have rules for the unions where the kids can only be on set for like 3 hours and then they're gone.
Yeah, it's like it was 9.5 hours plus an hour of that was lunch and 3 hours that was school. And so when you're working, they want you to be working, and that's a tricky dynamic because you're, oh, look at me, aren't I cute? They don't like that anymore.
And then you get acne and they're like, nah, you're not so cute anymore.
Shave off
that peanut butter's not going to sell itself, especially not with that acne. Wait, so not to get all James Lipton on you, but in 1988, you were in a film with Whoopi Goldberg.
Clara's Heart.
That was your first gig, yeah?
That was my first gig. My first gig of import, probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the gig before that? A commercial.
I auditioned for Clara's Heart, and then I didn't get it. And then that same audition tape got me an agent in Hollywood, California. Actually, it was more Studio City.
Gotcha.
Thank you. But that's more impressive.
We're all totally judging you right now. Studio City agent.
Studio City is where all the studios are. I don't know if you know what the word is.
Yeah, Brad. Would you stop embarrassing
me? Well, maybe that's why I have not been in a movie with Whoopi Goldberg, because I haven't figured this out yet. Yeah. I've been going to Arcadia.
I ended up getting an episode of a TV show called Throb.
Nice.
That sounds like an interest. That sounds like a movie I couldn't rent until I was 18.
It was a lot of blowjobs. And then that's a good way to start.
That's what I get.
I learned a lot of different things.
That was when ABC Family was taking risks. You know, now they've really watered down their programming.
Sure.
Watered down. I did some of that.
Yes.
Now we know how you got all those parts.
Yeah.
You were skilled from day one.
No, it was a sitcom with Diana Canova and a guy named Jonathan Prince, and it wasn't even on a network. I think it was a syndicated sitcom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jane Leaves, the British woman from Frasier. Do you remember her?
Oh, yeah.
She was on it.
Awesome.
And I played a little kid who stalked her, of all people. So I was one episode of that, and then I ended up getting Clara's Heart, and then started working more after that.
Was it weird to go then, because you were commuting essentially from New Mexico to Hollywood for a while. Was it strange then to go back to New Mexico, or how did
you adjust?
Yeah,
it was strange. Yeah, but it felt more like a cool adventure.
Yeah,
I'd go away for 4 weeks and go to Vancouver and hang out in Vancouver for 4 weeks and meet all these fun people and do this thing and then go back to my regular life.
How did the other kids treat you?
They were fine.
Yeah.
Once I got to, I moved from Ruidoso to Albuquerque when I became a sophomore in high school, and that was a much bigger town.
Yeah,
I had a theater department, and so then I could hang out with sort of the drama geeks and join the thespian club and do all of that stuff. So I was right at home in that world.
Did they think that it was cool that you were getting these outside parts in Hollywood, or was there like a jealousy thing?
Like, ooh, Neil thinks he's so cool. He's friends with Whoopi Goldberg.
I think I was more paranoid that dynamic existed than aware that it actually didn't exist that much. Because I wanted to be anonymous at the same time. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to not make any sort of waves. So I was probably hyper aware that that could be something that's pick-onable.
Mm-hmm.
But, I, you know, maybe a couple times people would... I got a lot of Doogie... People would shout Doogie as I was leaving someplace. Like, they'd, I'd see little clusters of kids from school, maybe not even my school, but other high schools in Albuquerque, at the food court at the mall or something, right? And they would recognize, I'd see like, oh, pish, 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 posh, pish, posh. And then as I was leaving, hey, Doogie! Yeah. Well, and then I was like, what? Why are you probably fucking waiting until I'm leaving?
Yeah. In their defense, weird... you know, and I read this, you used to wear your scrubs all the time at the food court. So that
was that a problem?
No, that's just a choice you made.
I was a messy eater.
Yeah. That made sense.
I'm going to get my real clothes messed up.
How long into Doogie Howser did you stay in New Mexico, or when did you move out to LA?
I stayed there until I graduated high school, which was 1991.
Okay, wow.
And once I graduated, and that was season two of the show, and we did four seasons of the show. So once I was able to work full time, I just moved to LA.
Only four seasons? Why does it feel like that show was on for like 25 seasons?
It was one of those in syndication shows, and it was on all the time, twice a day, every day on some channel for a while.
Fuck. Yeah. That's crazy, right?
Wonder Years.
Yeah.
Those two.
Dude, that's your... that's what we grew up on.
You ever call up Fred Savage and Jaleel White and just be like, let's throw down like in the Anchorman movie? Just have like the child stars
of the 90s.
Battle of the 90s,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, Candace Cameron, knife or gun.
I do sort of watch everyone and sort of keep tabs and want to make sure everyone's doing all right.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tricky beast. The idea of working as a professional and having that kind of professional weight on your shoulders and the financial ramifications of it at such a young age, it just, you have to navigate that and then more importantly, navigate out of it, because inevitably a show like that stops existing. And then that world of craft service and drivers of cars that take you to places and people and adoration and stuff and liquid income stops happening unless you just keep working all the time, which is very rare. And so then there's a propensity for depression or drug abuse and things like that that I think a lot of those kids tend to end up having,
because
they end up with all this money that they can just spend on whatever, and they have people that say yes to them all the time. So
How did that happen
to see that most of the kids of my age didn't go through the River Phoenix-y sort of hardcore heroin stages and that. Fred's doing great. He was just on a TV show.
Right, yeah, with Rob Lowe, and he's the voice of Honda.
Is he the voice of Honda?
He's the voice of Honda. I only know that because we have the voice of Hyundai right here. So,
you guys are going to throw down.
Yeah. So,
both Savage, if you're listening. Maybe in the parking lot of the IHOP at 5 o'clock tomorrow. I'll be in LA, but so you got to decide which IHOP you think I'm going to be at.
But he also, Fred directs a ton. He does a bunch of pilots every year. And
How much medical stuff did you know going into that? Like,
it's none. Zero.
Yeah. Do any actors for any medical show? It seems like I've heard stories of them, like the jargon is so unfamiliar.
It was all unfamiliar, but there's so much medical shit to learn that you can't really have a primer.
Did they try to have you go to any classes to at least like...
There was a woman named Linda Klein who was our medical advisor, and she would...
This is a heart,
week,
this is a penis, see ya.
No, it was more, here's a raw chicken breast, and we're going to teach you how to do a suture. So this is this is how you take it out of the package, and this is the clamp, and you put the needle here, and this is how you make a suture, and this is how you cut it, so that you at least have a basic skill set of what you're doing.
Amazing.
And otherwise, I remember I had a picture book that was by a professional photographer of trauma in ER rooms. Or maybe it followed a singular.
Okay, what's up,
hospital.
Nightmares?
No, it was real research though. But it was pictures of people at the end of their shift, you know, with their gloves in their hand, maybe just lost a patient.
Just
or something.
Like war photography, almost.
Yeah, it was very much like war photography, black and white pictures. And I remember looking at that a lot because that was kind of the juxtaposition of the show, which was I'm a kid going through adolescent change, but also having to process real adult situations.
Right, and you. Or doing that at the same time, because now you're in the adult world and you're running a business. And I heard that your parents stopped being lawyers in New Mexico and then moved out to L.A.?
Had to, by law.
Wow.
You have to have a parent with you or a guardian. And I think coming from New Mexico and not being in the business that our family, all of us thought it made less sense to just have your child go away from you to Hollywood of all places and be on their own. So
yeah,
they both came up, and so that the family was together. That was tricky. But
what do you think? What do you think the show did? I know what Doogie did for me as a kid. It was very inspiring. I'm sure for a lot of kids.
Nice.
But what do you think? Why do you think it resonated so hard with people? You were phenomenal, by the way.
I think it was one of those shows. Thanks, man. I think it was one of those shows that didn't talk down to kids and allowed families to watch stuff together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And back then, I think Wonder Years, and it wasn't a multi-camera sitcom. It was filmed as a single camera, almost Sex in the City, with him typing his thoughts at the end of the
Every kid around the world, when they sat down at their computer, like, wanted to have an emotional wrap-up of the day. I remember sitting at my computer, like, in my head, hearing, being like, today I almost touched a boob. We'll see. Tomorrow's another day. Hashtag recess. That's before hashtags were even happening.
Nice.
Sorry if that brought up, like, bad memories. If we, like, hum the song and now you have, like, a Pavlov dog reaction. Like, oh, man. No, screw you guys.
Everyone, that's a great sketch.
Not everyone. Many people worry that chapter bugs me and that I don't want to be called it or anything, and I'm totally fine with it.
I mean, you realize
I'm still surprised that I'm 43 years old, right? That I have been not doing that show since I was
19?
19 years old. So doing the math, that's like 50 years have passed.
And okay, well, we'll double check that math after the podcast, but yeah, it's close.
I never went to school. Yeah. But people still say, just still call me Doogie, especially in Harlem.
It blows your mind, huh? You really
I'm a grown ass man with two children of my own, and not that it offends me, and they're not saying it to offend me.
Yeah, no, you're just curious as to, like, why that role.
Yeah, I'll say, hey, why that one? I like your new show.
maybe call me that guy.
Okay,
anyway, so no,
I mean, and then
I played him, so I'm happy.
And then when Doogie ends, I mean, that, are you aware at that age that, like,
that you're not a real doctor? Like, do you go out into the world and people go, yeah?
No, they gave me a lithium prescription. So for about 7 years after that, I was totally fine.
But like when you're trying to move on to other things, are you aware at age 19 of the pitfalls that have, like, gotten the people that have been typecast in a role? Are you scared that you're not going to find another role?
I wasn't really scared. I was worried, I think, that was going to have been it.
Yeah.
So it was less that I was worried about being pigeonholed as only that kind of person, but just that I would not be able to have the fun of working again.
Sure.
So I think that gave me the drive to keep wanting to do different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe break out of that box. It was fun to play that part, but I think it was more fun to play the crazy guest stars or Vinny or the people that got to have fun. Doogie was very kind of serious and always...
He was a straight man while all the craziness was happening around him.
That's exactly right.
So when Harold and Kumar comes up, that's like, I mean, right? Complete...
Seems fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, that was a great... Something I had nothing to do with was written...
For you.
Assuming that I would do it. I didn't know the dudes at all.
Wow.
And I read it and I thought...
You played that guy so good. Like, I mean, and had you ever, even in any musical or any sort of class, ever done like that? For, I guess, because it was just like...
I just liked how, what a twisted reality it was.
Yeah.
Were you worried?
It's fun to play I'm Rolling on Ecstasy as myself.
Right.
Because it was such a broad comedy that it seemed palatable.
Yeah. Were you worried that people would think that...
That's the real Neil.
That's who he is. We all know. Like,
no.
Because you're playing yourself, but not yourself.
But I like that, you know. I like magic is my hobby, and and I like subterfuge, and I like the idea that you think someone or something is one way, but it's actually another.
Yeah.
So I'm drawn to performances that are clearly not the person, but are fully completely formed, or people that are circus performers and can do amazing single-handed handstands, but then otherwise can exist
it's
with,
like,
anonymity.
Yeah, it's like Brad, like, in the right light. He's actually 6'4".
And is it 6'4"?
Yeah, it's really, really good tricks.
The way he's sitting
that's
on that beanbag. Yeah,
yeah.
This light, it's not, it's very, it's shortening.
It's so funny you talk about the circus performers, because that's how you and I really got to know each other, is the Neil Patrick Harris's circus awesomeness, which if you're in America, you're like, what was that? Because it wasn't in America. It was
Montreal.
Yeah, the Montreal Comedy Festival played on HBO Canada, where you got a variety of acts, and it truly was a variety.
Yep.
And then you had me doing stand up, and you had Puddles the Clown singing, and you had
he sang.
Oh yeah,
that's amazing. Yeah, he's the best.
He's unbelievable.
Brad just sent me a video, or was it a picture of you guys on the ship? Right.
Yeah, the whole thing ended with us coming out on the Titanic.
Oh my God.
Neil doing the arms spread, and then Puddles was singing the song. And
oh my God.
The most impressive thing was there was a acrobat, I don't even know if that's the right term, but named Hugo.
Hugo Desmarais.
Yeah. And he had this cage that raised up in the air and he was spinning on it. You got on this thing.
Yeah.
You hung from your legs, and the cage raised like at least 15, 20 feet in the air.
Yeah.
And you were, did you have an agent or someone that going like, Neil, it's Canadian television, you know, like you don't have to risk your life.
Dude, it wasn't even supposed to be on TV. I mean, I knew that it was just for laughs for the channel or whatever, but I was never even doing it for the TV thing. I just thought it was cool to host a show for the festival. And that's why I wanted it to be all interesting performers, because I thought, I don't really want to host just a stand-up special.
Yeah.
Because there's 17 of those a day there every day. So I said, I'd do it if I could do fun, crazy circus, like crazy alternative viewing.
Yeah.
And that's why you were so amazing, because you fit in sort of the carnival world, but your stand-up is so strong that it was the perfect juxtaposition. He got
four shows. Yeah.
Four standing ovations, which was magnificent.
Yeah.
You crushed it.
Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity, because now Montreal, I'm on their radar like for life. They're like, well, you're going to come back and get another 27 standing ovations, right? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if my new stuff is that good, but okay, I'll try.
It was just subpar stuff around. Made you really look
That musicals, I mean, so you musicals have been something you've loved always, yeah? And just the...
I like musicality.
Yeah.
I've always liked circus stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, growing up in small town New Mexico, we'd go to Albuquerque to the New Mexico State Fair, and I would always go to the Midway where all the carnies were, and I was just fascinated by the freak shows and by the clown in the cage that you'd throw the try and hit a target, and I was just fascinated by that world, by the three-headed man and the chicken with hair instead of feathers. And so
how come that's not on the menu at KFC?
There was a guy named Popeye, speaking of chicken, and he was an African-American dude, and he's really actually famous, and he came through Albuquerque, and I didn't even know he was famous, and he's Popeye, and he would look at you and his eyes would open really wide and his eyeballs would come out of their socket toward you.
What?
And they'd shake.
No.
And then they'd pop back in like the Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah.
When
he gets in the car and they turn. That is a legitimate thing that certain people can do.
So he's like like a cartoon when they see a pretty lady. It's just that my God.
So I've always loved that. Then I went to
there's a performing aspect to all that too, right? So you're like, they're on whether how many people are watching, but they're on a stage more or less, right? So I mean, there was that element that you were enticed by.
I liked the performing, I guess, but not just for the sake of being the one noticed.
Yeah,
I liked the special skill.
Yeah,
I liked magic, the fact that someone could do something and you wanted to know how it was done, but there was a sort of a secret behind it.
Right.
Then when I went and did that Throb episode, actually, I stayed in Santa Monica, and next to it was a big tent, and Cirque du Soleil had just started performing in California, and their first show was... God, I don't know, so ages ago.
I think it was Cirque du Soleil, Tom Selleck, when they were doing a whole...
That's right.
It was like a best of work.
They would like dance on his mustache. Yeah. I remember that one.
It was like Magnum P.I., Mr. Baseball.
That's a big mustache.
It's a big mustache. It was the whole set.
I remember seeing it, though, and there was a comedian, clown named Denis Lacombe.
Nice.
And he had a really famous act where he'd walk out and he was a conductor of classical music.
That's
and he
awesome.
Would get and lock into a little mini trampoline, and he had big... ski boots on, but you couldn't really know because of the way he was a clown, so it did just look like dark boots. And he would stand, and he didn't know that that's what it was. And he'd start conducting, and then he'd lean way forward, and since he was on the mini tramp, his whole body would lean forward, and then he kept the baton kept flying out of his hand, and he'd dig and pull out another one, and it would get more and more frantic, and he'd end up pulling out hundreds of batons, and his pants would fall down, and he'd drop down, and it was so visually amazing.
Yeah, well, now I have a new closer.
Yeah, Danny Lacombe, I think he's still alive.
That's
he's
amazing.
Still doing that act. And then I saw David Shiner do his circus act. So all of that's kind of how I got intrigued by theater and by musicals, because I think there's something about an audience sitting watching live someone do something that you can't do or didn't even think could be done. And that could be singing a song about breakup in a musical, you know, and you've never felt that way, but you never thought that those words could go together. Watching Hamilton, those all of those rapid fire words, I didn't even know that those internal rhymes existed, and then to have that happen is like, that's a super heroic kind of thing.
Does it
akin to David Copperfield doing some kick-ass, you know, sawing a woman in half in front of me? Like, I love that live stuff.
Hey, Brad.
What's going on, Adam?
I got some exciting news.
Holy crap, they're making a Mighty Ducks 4?
No, but now I'm just really upset that they're not.
Oh, they should.
Brad and I are back doing exclusive episodes of the About Last Night podcast on TuneIn.
That's right, and these are episodes with just Adam and myself. No guests, just us hanging out, shooting the shit, updating you on our lives, and most importantly, being funny.
Yeah, the OG way, the way this podcast got started. We took a little break, but we are back doing exclusive episodes, just Brad and Adam. And you can get these episodes where, Brad?
You can get these exclusive episodes on the TuneIn app. That's Woo! Right. Just download the TuneIn app. TuneIn spelled T-U.
T-U.
T-U what? T-U-N-E-I-N. Download that TuneIn app. Type in About Last Night, and you can get these exclusive episodes. And remember, they're only on TuneIn. They are not available on iTunes, our website, or anywhere else. Just TuneIn.
That's why it's special. That's why it's exclusive. Speaking of exclusive, continue to enjoy this amazing episode of the About Last Night podcast with me, Adam Ray.
And me, Brad Williams.
Does that fascination with all that play into every time you've hosted an award show, like your... like wanting to have some just the amount of chaos and different moments like in the Tony. I mean, just sure. Every time you host, those numbers are incredible.
Oh, thanks. Well, award shows are fun because they're one-offs, right? So you get to plan a singular thing that you never do again. And it usually is topical about the award show that season themselves. So it involves, for the Tonys, the musicals of that season, or for the Emmys, the TV shows of that year. And then it's kind of a... being a chef and creating a meal, right? So you need some palate cleansers and dumb jokes and things that make people feel better than you. Like my sense of humor level at award shows tends to be dad puns and things like that.
Which, you know, who doesn't like those?
Yeah. Our next presenter at the Oscars is this woman, and you can eat her with her spoon. Ladies and gentlemen, Reese Witherspoon. I got dinged for that so hard. But I did that kind of intentionally because I think it's funny. And I think that the audience in the theater doesn't want to be yelled at or made fun of. You kind of go, womp, womp. And then your palate is cleansed.
I'm the sorbet of
award show host.
Also, you have to be as likable as you are and have like... you know, just the comedic chops to be able to do something like that and not have it seem like you're getting hit over the head with a dad pun. It's still like, you still laugh at it.
It's Carson.
Yeah.
It's like old school Carson stuff.
And when you're hosting an award show, which, if anyone, Google the Tony opening numbers.
Dude, you crush those things so hard.
It's not just for gays anymore. Is one of the best things I've ever seen on television.
Yeah,
I truly believe that.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
That was fun that they let us do that because the Tonys were always really reverential.
And well, it's a very niche market.
Yeah, and so to sing about gay anything was kind of only allowed that year because Book of Mormon was the big musical of that year, and Book of Mormon was so in your face with its comedy and lewdness that you could be a little more lewd with it.
Yeah, you seem tame.
So we did actually Book of Mormon. Tame. It allowed us to do that. The one I liked was Bigger, that Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Because it's Hamilton, Bigger.
Yeah,
that one.
He wrote that with a guy named Tom Kitt. And that was massive. We'd gotten back to Radio City Music Hall, and every cast of every show was a part of it, and we had very little time to rehearse it, and it just kept growing and growing and growing, and that was a really fun one to do.
It's just, like, was there pressure on you to top yourself every year? Like, okay, well, I'm back hosting again, so we got to we got to have a plane land on stage.
Well,
driven by Sully Sullenberg.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's going to happen. If anyone can do it, Sully can.
I didn't think that way with the Tonys because, again, it revolves around the season.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the Book of Mormon thing, it seemed fine to be irreverent. So that one was kind of fun. And then we had been at the Beacon Theater, which is not even a theater. It was an old movie house up in the Upper West Side. And so it was a smaller packed-in space. And so then when we got to go back to Radio City, it just seemed like it was an appropriate thing to go, now look at where we are. We're in this gigantic space, so let's put on a show that's gigantic. So that kind of wrote itself.
Mm-hmm.
I would certainly not want it. And then the Oscars was the last one that I did. And that was sort of, I wanted to be as visual as possible. So I danced with my shadow that got large and then turned out to not be my shadow but a projection.
Yeah.
And we did some kind of in-camera editing stuff. But I really wanted that to be as cinematic as possible, even though it was an opening number. So they kind of correlate to whatever it is.
To whatever, whatever it is you're doing.
I feel like saturation point was very reached before that Oscars thing.
What is the most exhilarating part about being on stage? Either whether you're hosting or in a show, but like, just, I guess, for people, you know, I did musical theater all through high school and college. And then when I stopped, that's when I started doing stand-up because I was like, I still need that live fix because it was just like, and I was always a funny kid, but it was like, I need to be on, like, that interaction between the audience and being on stage and live is just like unlike anything, obviously. So like,
so different when you're performing than when you're hosting. Hosting is time management. And
you're thinking of the next thing.
Thinking of the next thing, but you're trying to gauge the audience. But the audience that's there is so disparate because they're all there because they're nominated and their category's about to come up and and they're next to seat fillers who they don't know, or they're next to other celebrity people that they don't know, and it's, there's commercial breaks and there, can you pee and do you have time and you're starving and you're in a dress, like all of it's very it's a weird kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And so you're trying to sort of manage that. But I think for me, not to sound too sort of granola crystally, but
which is our sponsor, so thank you for saying that. Crystal granola. You can only get it at Neil's.
From the makers of Crystal Pepsi comes Crystal granola.
Well, then it's not going to do well.
Oh, man.
But I do recognize that when you're performing live and it's going well, and I'm probably the same would be in stand-up. In fact, I'm positive it would be the same in stand-up, that there's a communal energy that's palpable,
absolutely,
that's almost tactile, that you can, if you hold up something too long, you'd lose it. You can feel it kind of going away and you have to work to get it back. You're kind of tapping this energy back and forth.
Yeah.
So doing Hedwig or something where it's just me on stage and it's not me at all, but I can get real serious and really dramatic and you can feel the energy of that, so different from doing a runner of three jokes, each one out laughing the next one and the energy of that. I think anyone can kind of relate to that idea of being, giving a good toast at a wedding and it landing really well.
Right.
And when you're
like, oh man,
in the middle of it, you get serious. You talk about the first time you've been, everyone gets really, really quiet. Like, that feeling is a palpable, is a really visceral feeling.
Have you had to give, I just, in a little tangent, but have you had to ever give a wedding speech or toast?
I'm most nervous about doing things like that.
I was just going to say, I can't remember who I was just talking to, but it was somebody who performs a big comic and they were
the worst.
Had to do it and they were like, I get more nervous for those than I do playing in front of 10,000 people. And
without question.
Right?
Then it's all friends and family, essentially, if you're if you're the best man or something.
Yeah.
Have you had to do them?
Because then you have to, I haven't really given best man speeches.
Well, Brad's about to get married, maybe we'll see.
Never know.
Coming on that boat again, that'd be great.
That's some knock jokes.
Really, plenty of dad jokes.
When are you getting married?
Probably late August. Thank you. Any advice other than have Elton John play your reception? Because I know Elton John played your reception, and I don't think I can compete with that.
An Elton John mixtape?
Could we get John Elton, the folk singer from Burbank, California?
I think we can get him. I think he's available.
Do you guys get super insecure, though, with
all
with
the time
your own content as a stand-up? Because I feel like stand-up is one of those things that I could never do, even though I do.
I disagree.
Comedy stuff sometimes. But I would be most insecure writing my own stuff and then presenting my own stuff for the first time or second time or third time even, and having it not land, or it landed last night but it didn't land. Would send me to a mind fucky place hardcore.
It does sometimes when a joke isn't as good as it was the night before. For me personally, it's constantly coming up with new material where it's like I've been like I'm insecure that the audience has seen a joke before. If I'm still doing a joke from a special that aired like 2 months ago, it's like, oh crap, they're gonna and I have to keep reminding myself that I'm not the center of the universe. People don't like have my jokes just on recall where they know them all. So,
but are you worried? Do you worry if something's funny, or do you pretty much say if you come up with a joke that makes you laugh personally, you'll think that
I think
this is
you know
funny.
The name of the game is honing your point of view and your voice, and that just comes with time. It's like he's 13 years in, I'm about to be 10 in. Well, so now we both know when we go up on stage with something that we've thought about that day of. And we've worked it out enough in our head. Some people go on stage and they have just one simple idea and they'll write on stage and come up. But like we both kind of have to beat it out a little bit to know what we're going to say more or less. And you kind of trust yourself that, that it's not going to completely tank. And sometimes, you know, it will a little bit. But I think you can attest that like you always get some laugh from something new because you know your point of view on it.
That's good to know. This would be a good edit point because I can't remember her name. Who was the woman that sang at the end of...
Bridget.
Yeah, okay.
Bridget Everett. Amazing.
So remember in Circus Maximus, Bridget Everett, first night, we go out there and she does this song that's really lewd and she goes out into the audience and it did not land. It was bad. It didn't land at all. The crowd was not into it.
They were scared of her.
That's a very specific thing too. Totally. Yeah. But I remember her afterwards sitting in her dressing room kind of fanning herself, sort of shell-shocked.
Yeah.
Because I think she...
It crushes a lot.
...expected to have killed it. Yeah. And it kind of killed her a little bit, that first one. And I thought... like this conversation, what I brought up, I said, I would never want to do that. That would be the most insecure, worst feeling of thinking that you
tanked
your own material.
But then here's where it kind of goes and it comes back around. But there then is no better feeling than when it tanks and then you figure it out and then it works again.
True.
That because then you've conquered something.
Nice.
So
and that's the challenge of it. And that's, I think you figure out early on, and we both did, where it's like, you have those early times of doing well and then not doing well. And then you just kind of face with that crossroad of like, all right, do I want to not have that, the feeling of not doing well again and figure that out? Or do I just want to go, all right, that was scary. I don't ever want to do that again. And that's kind of when people separate if they want to do it or not. But, but yeah, the feeling of figuring it out is like, I mean, taking something that gets some response and then like maybe sometimes it'll take a week or even a month, or we both come up with tags for things like years later, just because, a certain audience, you know, makes you kind of adjust the timing a little bit based on a laugh that you didn't, because you did a little nuance that made something else happen. And then you're like, oh shit. And then in the moment you add some other stuff because they laughed at something you didn't expect. And that's when it's really cool.
What about talk show stand up?
That's I mean,
I'm not a fan. I've only done the couch once with Ferguson and it was like, that was the best. That to me seems like how it should be all the time.
Well, he was the greatest, like
the man. Just,
but I would say when they would introduce and you'd walk out there and stand there, you have your 3.5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
That seems super plotted out. You have to, right?
Because it's got to get cleared by all the censors.
It's gotta be clear. I thought you meant when people will do bits on the couch that are planned. Like a comic will do bits in conversation,
and those are planned too.
Sometimes comics do that. Well, they have and they'll set them up. I think it depends on the guest and like if they're quick enough to just have
if the comic like funny banter leans over to the talk shows, goes, hey, ask me about my kids, and then they go, hey, so you got two kids, and he goes, oh well, yeah, speaking of which, this just happened, and then they go right to the bit.
With the sets you have to just come out,
it's very impressive.
I feel like you could totally do it. I mean,
you were offered to do it because there were talks of you replacing Letterman at one point, but
I don't consider that stand-up.
That's something completely different.
That's writer's room.
But you have done a monologue,
stuff, and then your monologue's all on cue cards, and you've already vetted it and decided that I'm totally capable. I mean, that's sort of a word show host comedy, which is totally fine. And I'm funny-ish, so I don't think that I don't have a sense of humor. I would just it would be really insecure for me to create my own material and then present it at Yuck Yucks and then have people not laugh and stand like call shit out at you. That would just, I would.
Well, based on what I've seen in your career that you've, and how much work you put into it, whether it be Broadway, whether it be magic, whether it be TV, whether it be movies. I mean, I think you could do it because you would dive into it. I mean, hell, you brought back the variety show, for God's sakes.
Well,
like
for one season.
For one season.
Yeah, that was pretty voracious.
That was a lot. I like chewing. I don't know. I just like challenging myself and trying new stuff. I maybe from back from the Doogie days of wanting to do something unlike myself after that chapter had been finished. I'm always looking for new types of things to do.
And what if you did
the series of unfortunate events?
Oh, yeah.
Which is the Netflix show. That's the current thing that I'm doing.
That looks incredible.
Super cool. And
coming out on my birthday, January 13th.
Nice.
So there you go. Yeah. So
it's your day.
So, yeah. I mean, I know what I'm doing now. I'm just going to have a series of unfortunate event party where I just got to get into Count Olaf makeup.
That's, can I dress up as Scarface? I give you the huabua for free.
Do it.
That's fun.
Now you brought that up. How did that come about? Was it an audition process? Was that brought to you?
It was brought to me, sort of. I had just finished doing Best Time Ever, which was the variety show that I did. Did we do 8 of those? I think 8 of them. And a few months had gone by, and it wasn't going to get picked up for season 2. They were willing to pick it up for season 2. And
that was a lot of fun, by the way. I love the interaction with the people at home.
The whole purpose of that show was to just be a real mainstream, set your remote down, and we're going to show you really random shit that we've sort of vetted. There's a lot of surprises, and it was based on a UK show, which is still super successful, called Ant and Dec's Saturday Night Takeaway. And I loved that. And it just kind of melded into something different. And I think at the core, some things weren't transferable.
Yeah.
Mainly the ads were something that you won on the UK show. Mm-hmm. In fact, they would say, "Welcome to Saturday Night Takeaway, where you don't just watch the ads, you win them," everyone says together. And I thought that was a cool idea.
Yeah.
If you're at home, you can watch the ads for a car and the ads for a crock pot and everything. And then at the end, someone randomly chosen from the audience gets to win all the things that you just watched.
It's awesome.
It was weird. Wow. Good synergy.
Yes.
In the corporate ideal of that.
Sure.
And so that was kind of part of what we wanted to do. And then American ad companies work in a much, much different way.
Yeah.
They need equality. If you're going to spend time talking about this car, then the other company who's donated money needs equal time.
Oh, man.
And,
sure.
You know, it turns into a real big thing. So we ended up not being able to do that. I think that sort of hurt it a little bit. Anyway, after that, we just could have done a second season, opted out just because it seemed
you did it. You brought back the variety show. You did what you wanted to do.
I was just working really hard, and not as many people were watching as we had hoped, as the network had hoped. Mm-hmm. People that watched it liked it, but it was prosthetics and hidden cameras and going to different states.
Yeah,
and
so many elements.
And hiding, and then surprise. It was just a lot of work.
Yeah.
And so it didn't pay off.
How soon into something like that can you get a gauge, or at least a feeling of like, okay, maybe we're just not gonna.
Not until after it was done.
Okay.
Because that was live.
Yeah.
We didn't film that, pretended it was live, and then edited. That was live, straight up live. So at the end, I was doing backflips off of off of what was called a
trampoline.
No.
I'm trying to do this. Is a weird charades. Neil is doing all these different, like
pogo stick.
Oh, pogo stick. Okay,
wow. Plant pneumatic. There you go. Pogo
would
stick.
Not. All right, we will not be on a charade team anytime soon. I was like,
terrible charade.
Dropping is that like one of those? You're like one of the claws and like one of those toy machines.
Is
that a teabagging?
Teabagging. Yeah. Nope. Pogo stick.
Oh, okay. I mean, I was hoping for teabagging, but okay,
whatever.
But So after that happens, looking for the next project?
Licking my wounds a bit, mm-hmm. wondering what was next. And then this idea of doing a Netflix series with a lot of prosthetics felt very Lon Chaney and felt kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. It's a finite commitment, too, because there's only 13 books.
Yeah.
And so it meant that I would get to be the villain, which is sort of the fun role to play.
Yeah,
yeah.
In a project with creative control, because it's not a network show, so Netflix is known for not meddling creatively too much.
Yeah.
And then Barry Sonnenfeld was the big dangling carrot, because I've just been a huge fan of his aesthetic, and he has a really good visual taste and knows lenses really well. I love the Men in Black movies.
Yeah,
I love the sense of humor in them. The books are really funny. And so it seemed like
a cool gig, and it was great. It was super hard work.
Well, how much time in the makeup chair? Fun.
About 3 hours in the chair, wow. 2.5 hours every morning, wow. super early. But I play 4 different characters in it.
Oh, you're not just Count Olaf.
I'm Olaf in the first book, and then yeah. he runs away because his plan gets doesn't end up happening.
Spoiler alert.
And then in book two, he comes back as Olaf in disguise.
Nice,
gotcha.
To try and take the children, and then that doesn't work. And then in book three, he comes back as Olaf in disguise as a different person.
Sure.
And so every book. And I'll be doing it again in different characters.
Yeah.
It'll be all these different.
And I like that they're doing it as a TV show, because while the movie was great and I really did enjoy it, there, like you said, there's 13 books.
Yeah.
You can't put 13 books into a 2-hour movie.
And it was super cliff notesy, I thought, the movie.
Yeah. And especially the people that read the books were like going, what? They totally left that part.
Agreed. And I think there's a lot of fans of that series of books.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, they sold a gajillion of them.
Yeah.
Which is a number. I found out that's the actual number.
Is a bajillion?
Gajillion.
What?
Yeah. It's more than a billion.
All right, I'm super gullible. Are you fucking with me?
It's more than a bajillion. It's a gajillion.
All right, now he's full of shit.
Well, it sold a bunch of books, and people like it. And so, yeah, we spent 2 hours on each book, which is a feature film per book.
Yeah, and that will get more of the details that the lovers of the books wanted. And, I mean, do you look... Because the movie was still fairly recent. It was 10 years ago, I want to say.
More than that, 15.
15?
Do your research, Brad.
Yeah, okay. So, do you look at Jim Carrey's performance, or are you just, like, doing fresh eyes and saying, I'm going to just do my own thing?
Barry told me not to watch the movie.
Uh-huh.
Because he didn't want me to be one of those actor people that was stressed influenced. About the movie.
Yeah.
But I don't mind being influenced.
Yeah.
I want to be able to... I'm the kind of actor that likes to have as much information as possible. If other people have played a role, then I want to see them play that role so I can go, oh, good choice. I'll take that and I'll do that. Mm-hmm. Or, you lost me in this section, so I'm going to do it a little bit differently.
Like, if I'm going to star in Doogie the Musical, I'm going to go back and watch a couple seasons.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Are you doing Doogie the Musical?
I mean...
Well, I'm here to get you to sign off on the rights.
You make a good Vinny.
Hey, Doogie!
Wait, oh my God. That's... All right. Well, can you stop putting great ideas in my head?
I think Brad should be Doogie.
I agree.
You could be Vinny.
Child dwarf doctor. That's everything.
Hey, Doug.
Oh, God, Vinny. Is that pretty much the relationship?
Like a sighing voice you have for me.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
He's so over it.
But I watched Jim Carrey's performance, and it was very Jim Carrey, and I loved the books. I just thought it was very potentially darker and Cirque du Soleil-ish. To get back to Cirque, which is weird. I'm doing that over and over. But I wanted to do that. I wanted to be one of those
larger
supporting characters in a Cirque show that's sort of menacing in the corner physically.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I wanted it to stem from. So
did you get to find some cool things physically to kind of
I brought my trainer out from LA, from New York actually. And we were doing all these weird animal flow kind of things so that I could have a strong core but be able to sort of stand tall but lean over them a lot.
Yeah, because
he peered down his nose a lot.
Olaf's very menacing, to say the least.
Long fingers. I grew my fingernails out so long.
What?
I would cut my face in the middle of the night.
What? Wait, like, so you didn't go like...
I'd wake up and I'd go to work and they'd say, what happened? What did
you attacked by a wolverine?
About? And I'd wiped my eye or... scratched my forehead and my long nails cut. I had these marks all over my forehead.
I love how I love how you have 3 hours of makeup every day, but you're like, the nails have to be authentic. Yeah. Can't
well,
fake
how
those.
How cheesy would that be if you had press on nails?
Yeah,
I don't know. That would have been weird.
So man, so like, was there objection from your husband there? Where you're like, can you please just cut the nails?
Yeah, there was not a lot of digit action for a few months, if that's what you're asking.
I wasn't going to go that far.
Yeah,
but,
he was asking that.
Well, if
he
wasn't, I was. All you were asking.
Yeah. Right? Okay.
All right. Don't shake my hand.
In fact, I think that's the end of the pod. That's what we came here to find out. So,
like, really, I just have on my notes, make sure you get to digit action. That's all I got. So we're done after that.
I wanted to do a fun voice. So Count Olaf talks down here like this. Everything is very like low and menacing. And then everyone else has a different voice.
I'm Stefano, and I talk like this.
Oh, my God.
All right. Captain Shaman, he talks. He's a bit like this.
That Stefano voice you did. That's how everyone thinks I'm going to talk. and then you talk like a regular person.
Yeah, and everyone's like, oh, I'm so disappointed.
What I thought, a bummer.
Hey, I got the phone. That's how they think I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. That's so cool. Oh, my God.
And
I now
have a female, and she talks like this. Her name's Shirley. Shirley St. Cloud.
Oh, is she from the South?
She's kind of a little Christina Hendricks in Mad Men. Ooh, sort right. of like, yeah, the old talkie films from the 1940s, yeah. 50s. Where everyone says, see a lot at the end of their sentences. That's who see she what? Is. A lot. They'll say, don't you want to go here, see? This is the best podcast ever, see?
I mean, we're going to isolate that audio.
Yes, hey-o. For sure. Yeah.
And that and you saying Digit Action, of course. Is with all the stuff you've done, like in terms of like Friday Show Magic and everything else, is there something yet that you haven't done that you're like, I could still do this?
I really want to direct more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do sort of bigger gets, meaning as an actor, you sign up for a gig, but you're really only acting in it. You arrive a couple of weeks before or a week before, and you do wardrobe, and then you find out where you're staying, and then you act, and then you're done, and you split.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think the bigger get of casting something, and then location scouting, and then rehearsing, and then shooting the whole thing, and then editing the whole thing, I think it's just, I don't know, there's something, there's a deeper appreciation for it.
Yeah, and it's more your creation.
Yeah. I guess so, yeah.
And
Gone Girl was kind of, I mean...
Gone Girl was great. Actor-wise, I'd love, in the Gone Girl way, getting to work with David Fincher and for David Fincher was super great. Just watching someone of that caliber. And I felt the same way with Barry Sonnenfeld with Series of Unfortunate Events. Watching someone who's so good at what they do and getting to play in that sandbox is just awesome. Yeah. So if I was able to do something in that... You know, Star Warsy, like
oh
big,
shit,
giant, you know those big movies that would be not for clout per sake, but to be on a giant set in Zanzibar.
Oh my god,
you know
what I mean? The best, so yes.
I don't know. It'd probably be horrible with 6-year-old kids because I would miss them a lot because I, you know, those things film in
yeah.
very interesting.
Well, you just have to take them to Zanzibar.
Yeah.
What if they did like another Jurassic Park?
Like, see, something like that would be so fun,
right?
I do consider myself a bit of a technical actor.
Yeah,
I'm less inclined to be excited by an acting gig where I'm with other like-minded actors with a script that we can improvise around and we follow our gut instinct. I'd rather watch that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like the technical elements of an eyebrow raise here or a vocal change inflection or wire work or stunt stuff.
Yeah.
I've always loved.
Yeah.
Avatar. We need to get you an Avatar.
Rad.
Wouldn't that be unbelievable?
Well, let me call the vice president of show business.
I great. Yeah.
Do you have him on speed dial?
Yeah, I got him. Yeah,
it's great. Send him a Facebook message. yeah, that would be bonk. That seems like the ultimate, like, I mean, especially with all your, the circus.
I keep saying I want to be the Riddler.
Could you do about 7 more minutes? Yeah.
I keep saying that I want to be the Riddler in the movie, but and it sounds like I'm trying to get the job of being the Riddler.
Let's keep putting it out there.
That's not my goal because I don't.
It's my goal.
What's her name? It's Catwoman who would like show up.
Halle
in
Berry.
Her Catwoman suit. Remember?
She would do that.
Oh,
no, Pfeiffer.
Julie Newmar.
No, it was who was it?
One of the originals from the 1966.
No, from the movie.
Pfeiffer or Berry or was there another one?
Pfeiffer.
Is there another one?
Is it the wrong villain?
She didn't get it, and she kept showing up.
Judith Light?
Oh, yes. I know who you're talking about. Her Ryan something. She was in Ace Ventura. She was Lieutenant Einhorn.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you can't go from Einhorn to Catwoman. That's just nobody's
she
ever
kept
done
showing
that.
Up in Catwoman outfits trying to get the gig, and I'm not trying to do that with the Riddler.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
But I
despite
think
your
like
despite
that,
your Halloween photos, but yes,
yeah, that was my first taste of the Riddler. But something like that would be super cool in like that scale of movie to be. Because now with the watching Joss Whedon's Avengers and things where this. It's I have no idea how they're even filmed. It's just watching
it's
Doctor
so
Strange
big.
Or something where it's so
visually
spectacular and you don't even know what part has been layered on and what parts are real. I think all that would be that would be a new exciting.
That can happen because didn't Joss direct Dr. Horrible's sing along?
Yeah,
which was a cult hit.
A cult hit.
That you were in and a friend showed to me and I was amazed by it, going, what how is this not a just network all the time. This needs to happen.
We would love to do another version of that in some way.
So yeah, I mean,
but I'm not pining for work. I'm happily working on a gig that's very much what I'm speaking of. It's mm-hmm. much more. It's much less superhero, but it's much very, very, very visual.
Right now,
Series of Unfortunate Events. Yeah. All of the sets are real sets on a stage.
That helps, yeah.
Oh my God, it's amazing. It's just amazing. And we're in this real world and I'm playing multiple characters. It's super duper crazy fun. So
do you ever get crazy lost in it where does it take an adjustment period to come home? I mean, or can you just step right out? You know how sometimes
you still got the nails.
I was very happy to clip those nails when I was able to.
Because
then I could jerk off. That's what I mean.
Well, obviously.
Digit action.
Hey. Sure, digit action.
And we just lost our sponsor, Crystal Granola.
Hey, Crystal Granola, come on
back.
I'll take it back.
We'll put his face on the bag jerking off. It'll sell more bags. I do want to say, before we wrap this up, I am the biggest Muppet fan.
Nice.
Known to men.
Nice. Yes.
Actually, I'm flying back early to have callbacks for Muppet Babies, the reboot tomorrow.
Cool.
So say a prayer for Kermit and Animal. We'll see what happens.
What did you think of the new Muppet Show revamp that they did on ABC?
Man, I don't know where you stand on this, but like Jim Henson was a god to me. Mm-hmm. And I got so attached to all the original everything that it's like, it's almost like growing up with your dad with a mustache and then he shaves it one day and you go, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I still loved it because I loved that the Muppets came back. I think like...
The sense of humor was good. It was a little jarring to see the... talk into the camera structure of it, the Modern Family kind of structure to it.
I get the like updated, like let's kind of go with the times. And it sounded cool on paper, but I think the original format of the Muppet Show was so...
It's like The Office.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the original format, you know, to have it just so be good. A behind the scenes look, you have it was so like, you just got to be a fly on a wall to a show instead of, you know...
I got to do a thing that we produced called Neil's Puppet Dreams, which you should look up online. And I got to use the Henson alternative puppets.
What?
They had they made a group of maybe 20, 30 puppets that they did an improv show called Puppet Up. So it was those puppets.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Now you know he's dedicated because I have no idea what you're talking about with Puppet Up.
They did it called Stuffed and Unstrung. And essentially it was an improv show, which was super fun to watch. You'd go and there would be a wall of puppets and there'd be great improv puppeteers and a host that would say, that would get suggestions from the audience.
It's like Whose Line Is It Anyway
with puppets. Wow.
And then they'd go, okay, go. It's going to be Tom and Susan and Barry. And they'd go up and they'd grab puppets.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a camera on a tripod and then the screens would come on the side and they would...
It's unreal.
We're watching the puppeteers coming up with hilarious improv comedy while you're watching the screens and they're doing puppet comedy with improv stuff. It was a great skill set. And so we did 6 or 8 episodes of this show where I play this guy who, Neil Patrick Harris, who sleeps a lot, and when he dreams in puppet. And so each episode has a very...
Yeah, man, that's incredible.
Yeah, and Brian Henson, I do a Bollywood number where I'm in love with a cow, a sacred cow, and he plays the cow. So that was super fun to work with Brian.
Yeah, I was going to say,
great, and they're super creative. It's a special skill.
Absolutely.
You have an amazing... I had that Kermit phone, by the way, out there as a kid, so that's a... prized possession. But what you got to do like Sesame Street and stuff, yeah?
Yeah, I did a Sesame Street episode.
What was that
I was the fairy shoe person. I granted wishes in shoes. That was super fun to be on set there with the people. And it's just they wear the headbands with the microphone, you know, in their mouth, and they're looking at little screens and they're on little dollies that they can slide around on their knees. And
amazing.
It was just super dream come true. I love it.
Yeah, and whether it be finding out, because I know through all your involvement in magic, you found out how a lot of tricks are done, or now I guess seeing kind of sort of behind the scenes of Sesame Street, does that kind of ruin that for you, or does it almost make you love it more?
No, it makes me love it more.
Mm-hmm.
I seek information, and I really want to know how things are done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fascinated by going to Vegas, not because I like... the shows, but I like how the show fits into the structure of the casino. Like, I really like all of the machinations. Is that the right word?
How it all just kind of ties in with a general theme or something?
Why there's no windows and why they're pumping in smells.
Okay.
The chips go and how they get cleaned and what. Like, I'm just fascinated by how it all works. So magic, I love how it works. I always wanted to go see Sesame Street.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to see the wide shot. I wanted to see how the puppeteers actually do it.
Yeah.
Because I can see the puppets and I know that someone's manning it.
Yeah.
I just never get to see that.
There should be amount of time for a kid, though, to know, like, or to at least believe that that is real for a certain amount of time, don't you think?
Yeah,
or maybe.
But I think Avenue Q had that great idea of having the puppeteers be seen with the puppets, and you get to see two things at the same time.
And then
kind of why Puppet Up was so great.
Yeah,
yeah.
In fact, if I had a whole idea that I was going to do if I was ever going to host the Emmys. In fact, I think we went down that pathway a little bit. I wanted to do a Muppets Emmys opening number.
Yes, done.
Where I did all a bunch of sketches with Muppets, and then what you could do is go online and watch the wide shot and see.
Oh, man.
So if you watch it just on TV, it just seemed like I went into, now I'm in a neighborhood set. But if you were there in the theater or you watched it online, you could see all the people moving sets and all the stuff. I thought that'd be super cool.
Yeah, just so you could see a sort of a peek behind the curtain.
Yeah, exactly.
That was fascinating.
There was a great episode of the short-lived Tony Danza show on ABC.
Nice.
Drink Five if you're playing at home, the Tony Danza show drinking game. But where he had Steve Whitmire on, you know, the current Kermit, and he basically just into the camera, like, outs that, like, he's like, and we've got Kermit the Frog will be here, which is going to be a lot of fun. We'll talk to Kermit about, you know, the Muppets and all that stuff. And Steve Whitmire, the guy who does Kermit, because, you know, it's a guy who does it. And then he just kind of looks in the camera and goes, well, I think I just outed Kermit to all the kids. Kids, turn off the TV. And kind of like,
wow. Wow.
It was amazing.
Poor Tony.
Yeah, poor Tony. No, he's fine. He was just on Broadway.
Are you not supposed to, is that a thing that you're not supposed to say?
Well, I don't know.
I know that, like, I used to, one of my first jobs was I would work at Disneyland, and they would tell us, like, no, you never let the magic go. You absolutely never do.
Disney's very strict about.
There was like
the magic.
There was we would like be in a, there would be a dark room, and like Goofy would come out and like tie your wrist down. Some bad stuff would happen to you.
What?
I've worked for the Mouse, and backstage still the Mickeys are full headpieces on. Like all of that is very real. You don't see people.
Yeah.
Chain smoking cigarettes. With their
coming to Universal Studios.
Yeah.
A little different at the Haunts.
Yeah, I used to see Captain America doing bumps backstage. Oh, so, yeah, sorry, kids.
Soon. Which right, I mean,
not soon enough.
How do you think he got his super strength? That's how he did it, folks. Sorry.
This has been unbelievable.
Yeah,
thank you so much for taking time. I mean, this is like a treat beyond treats. And if you do want to do stand up, and Brad and I write your hour, and maybe it's as Doogie, you know, 20 years later.
Yeah, nothing will end my career faster than me doing a sad Doogie Howser stand up set.
Well, just wait till this podcast airs.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Neil.
My pleasure.
So that's the show. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more.
I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.